Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, March 11th. I'm not sure which is the bigger presidential campaign news this morning, that Joe Biden won as decisively as he did last night, or that both Biden and Bernie Sanders canceled their election night rallies in Cleveland because of coronavirus prevention. The future of campaign rallies this year is now a question, including for President Trump, who relies on those rallies for political oxygen and optics more than anyone. Bernie Sanders did not speak publicly at all last night. We'll talk about what his options are at this point. Joe Biden spoke before some of his core people in Philadelphia, and listen here to his tone, not just his words, but how he's trying to sound less triumphant than sober and presidential.
Folks, look, we were planning a big rally in Cleveland tonight, but the governor of Ohio asked the presidential campaigns to cancel their indoor public events in Cleveland with large, large crowds of people. And that's what we did due to the coronavirus, and he was concerned about that. And as I've said all along, that we would follow the guidance of the CDC, state and local officials, and public health officials with respect to our campaign events. We'll continue to do that. This whole coronavirus issue is a matter of presidential leadership. And later this week, I'll be speaking to you on what I believe the nation should be doing to address this virus.
Joe Biden, last night. With us now, New York Magazine national politics reporter Gabe DeBenedetti. Hi, Gabe. Welcome back to WNYC.
It is always great to be here.
Can you comment first on Biden's tone and content in that clip? What a contrast to last week after Super Tuesday, which was a bellowing comeback kid kind of barn burner.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think the context here, as you pointed out, and as Biden was talking about there, is the coronavirus spread and the need for him, he believes, to seem presidential, to seem like the leader in this moment. He did cancel his rally in Cleveland yesterday evening, as did Bernie Sanders. But it comes as he's sort of trying to pivot to the general election here overall. He's always been making a case against Donald Trump, but he's no longer trying to make a case as explicitly against Bernie Sanders as he once was. Last night, in addition to speaking about the coronavirus and trying to allay some fears and say, you know, America, we can have a leader as a president once again, speaking of himself, he did specifically address Sanders and his supporters, saying, you know, they're welcome within the Biden fold as well. So he's trying to do an overall tone shift here, trying to underscore his central message, of course, which is long been, as he often says, you know, that this is about the fight for the soul of the nation. It's not hard to see how the coronavirus concern fits in when it comes to the leadership question with that overall message.
Yeah, and you can hear the general election in that clip, not just the race against Bernie Sanders, mostly not the race against Bernie Sanders, as Trump is all grievance and accusation. Biden, if he's the nominee, might increasingly take that tone we heard in that clip as a counterweight.
There's no doubt about that. Obviously, this is where Biden feels that he's strongest in providing a sort of total foil to Trump. Where he says that Trump is erratic, he's going to try and prove that he is the stable leader here. Obviously, this is something that the people around Biden, but particularly his critics, are concerned about because he's not necessarily always been the most articulate speaker on a debate stage, for example. He often speaks in fragments and is just trying to get an overall point across rather than speaking in complete paragraphs, for example, like someone like Barack Obama once did. But here, you know, he was speaking with a teleprompter in a very sober area. He was greeted here. He was surrounded by staff and reporters only, not, of course, a big crowd. But this wasn't trying to turn this into a triumphant night in the same way that he was on Super Tuesday, when, of course, it was a little bit more of a surprise that he did so well. A lot of people around Biden feel that last night he really did more or less seal his victory in the primary, that they're not declaring victory outright yet. And in that sense, they did feel that he had more leeway to speak as the leader of at least half the country there rather than as simply another candidate.
Depending on the severity of the health crisis that we're heading into, how could Trump, if Biden is the nominee, even respond? At the moment, it's about accusing the Democrats and the media of coronavirus hype. How do you see Trump and coronavirus politically at this moment?
Well, I think it's very clear that a lot of people surrounding Trump are openly acknowledging or semi-openly acknowledging what a terrible political problem this could be for President Trump, in addition to the obvious human cost, simply because he keeps insisting everything is okay here, there's nothing to worry about, even as that is demonstrably not the case. And we hear more and more reports of the dysfunction all around the country when it comes to the government handling of this. And Biden's case is essentially, we just need competent leadership at this point. And it's painfully clear that we don't have that. I obviously hesitate to predict what President Trump will do politically, but yesterday his campaign announced a rally. They'll be holding a rally in Milwaukee, which clearly seems to suggest a sort of keep calm and carry on approach here, which is of course against the advice of all medical and public health professionals, who are essentially saying no more public events, no more indoor rallies like this. And of course, you know, neither Bernie Sanders nor Joe Biden has at this point advised what their schedule is going to look like. Even the Democratic debate on Sunday between the two of them in Phoenix is now going to be behind closed doors with no live audience. There's not even going to be a spin room or a press filing center because they don't want the media to be infected or at risk.
And I'm not going to play this clip, but I'll quote what a Fox Business anchor said about coronavirus on Monday that your colleagues at New York Magazine did an article about. She said, like with the Robert Mueller investigation, like with the Ukraine gate, they don't care who they hurt, talking about the Democrats, whether it be their need to create mass hysteria to encourage a massive sell-off in an overly anxious stock market, or to create mass hysteria in order to stop our economy dead in its tracks, unquote. And if that's the Trump and Fox News message, if nothing else, it seems to me like a big risk, because if many Americans get sick and our healthcare system get super stressed like Italy's, as some people are predicting, it's going to look not just ridiculous, but practically murderously ridiculous.
It's the height of irresponsibility. And the political question has to be secondary here. Obviously, if there are real millions of American lives at risk, as there appear to be with that kind of attitude on the table, then this is just something that it's completely unconscionable. And you saw Biden talk about that a little bit last night. And I would add that as has been as he made clear last night, he will be speaking about this a little bit more tomorrow in a speech. He canceled a public rally in Tampa and sort of made clear that he would be giving a broader address about the coronavirus. But yeah, if the Trump administration and Trump team message is essentially this is a Democratic hoax, if that continues to be the message while at the same time there is no increased capacity in the hospitals or for testing, of course it's going to be a total disaster. And I think, you know, you've done a good job covering this, and the media has done a good job covering this, but the message from Washington continues to be extremely lacking.
Let's talk about last night's results in the six states that voted. The newest result this morning is that Bernie Sanders did win North Dakota, but he lost four other states. Washington State is too close to call. Before last night, you said in New York Magazine, I really don't see a world where Sanders stops running after Michigan and a shellacking is unlikely. Was it a shellacking last night?
Yes, it was unlikely, but the latest results show him losing by 17 points in Michigan. And I think it's easy to forget just how symbolically important Michigan was for Bernie Sanders, largely because it was the state that rejuvenated him in 2016 and convinced him that he could win with his surprise victory over Hillary Clinton, but also because it's a state that demographically fit in with the overall point that he's trying to make, that he can win over working class white voters, African-American voters, Latino voters, younger voters. Of course, that didn't happen last night. Joe Biden was the one who won most of those groups, not younger voters, as well as bringing in a lot of suburban voters to the Democratic fold, which is something that the Democratic Party has been working to do and did successfully in 2018. But losing by 17 points is a massive blow to Sanders, not only symbolically, also in terms of the delegate haul. He's very far behind Joe Biden now. And Michigan was really one of his last chances to make up some of this ground that he had lost on Super Tuesday to Biden. Washington is another large state, and it seems to be basically tied at this point, though we don't know the final results yet. But Washington is yet another state that Sanders won by quite a large margin over Clinton in 2016. And he can't use states like this to make up this this delegate ground to Biden. And the next few evenings full of contests, I should say, look equally, if not more, foreboding for Sanders. So it's really hard to see how he comes back here. But I think the question for him now is not whether to suddenly drop out, because it seems unlikely. Of course, I'm not going to predict anything. It seems unlikely that he would do that, knowing how he thinks. And there is a debate on Sunday, so he still may see an opportunity to change the contours of this race, because we have not yet seen a one-on-one debate. But at the same time, there are different questions for people in his movement overall about what they're going to try and accomplish now that it does seem that Biden is really in the pole position.
And you had predicted that if Michigan and Washington went badly, you would expect to see Sanders going really hard at Biden at the debate next Sunday. That'll be in Phoenix Sunday night. What does go really hard at Biden look like compared to what he might have done anyway?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think when I made that prediction, reported speculation, I should say, based on conversations with Sanders advisors, I thought that the ground was going to look a little bit better for Sanders. But even these results are pretty difficult for him. That said, in recent rallies, he has been going after Biden in the following terms. He talks about Biden's history with his vote for the war in Iraq. He talks about his votes on NAFTA. He talks about his record, not in Sanders' eyes, sufficiently protecting Social Security funding over the last 30 years or so. And the point that Sanders often makes, and he tries to make this point without allowing his backers to boo Biden too much, because he always says, no, I like Joe Biden. This is about policy contrast. But what he's saying is it seems unlikely that a Democrat who has made those decisions, who has had those stances, would be able to beat Donald Trump in November. He's trying to make an electability argument because he knows that that is what voters want to hear right now. That said, obviously, that's a tougher case to make when you're this far behind in the delegate count and overall national polling as well.
I'm going to take a minute and lay out a couple of stats here and an analysis by Tom Edsall in the New York Times. Just on the stats, from what I've seen, Biden won every county in Michigan, every county in Missouri, every county in Mississippi, including counties in those states with college towns that Sanders won in 2016. Thomas Edsall in the New York Times today gives this example of a 2016 versus 2020 primary location. He writes, 4 years ago in Grant County, Oklahoma was a Super Tuesday state, Bernie Sanders crushed Hillary Clinton 57% to 32%. This year, Sanders didn't just lose Grant County, where 87% of the people are white and 77% without a college degree, indicating it should be Bernie territory, didn't just lose Grant County to Joe Biden. His percentage of the vote fell by 41 points to 16%. And then he writes, Grant County reflects what has become a nationwide pattern in the Democratic primaries, including those held Tuesday night. Sanders' support among white working class voters has begun to evaporate. What happened? Well, the way Thomas Edsall analyzes it, a crucial block of Sanders' 2016 voters is no longer a part of the Democratic primary electorate. The remnant of the conservative wing of the Democratic Party that in 2016 voiced its hostility to Clinton by voting for Sanders has now turned to President Trump. Many of these former Democrats, particularly men who hold right-of-center views on race, gender, and immigration, cast far fewer of their ballots for Sanders and his progressive policies this time around compared with 4 years ago, when they shied away from Clinton's perceived elitism, her ties to Wall Street, her social liberalism, and the fact that she is a woman. So, Gabe, how much do you agree with that analysis about white working class men who might have voted for Bernie in 2016, not even looking to the Democratic Party now?
I think that's something that a lot of Democrats are very concerned is true. And obviously, as Tom outlined in that analysis, the numbers do seem to back that, at least preliminarily. It's too early to say this, you know, with too much certainty. But this is something that the Sanders folks in particular are very concerned about, not just in terms of this particular race, but in terms of what it means for his appeal overall. There is a question of how much of his support in 2016 was simply an anti-Clinton vote versus a vote for his agenda. But Democrats overall have been very clear since 2016 that they do feel a need to try and make up this lost ground with a lot of working class white men in particular who have been flocking to Donald Trump. But there isn't a lot of evidence that the size of the Democratic Party is shrinking overall, because, of course, the corollary to that is that Democrats have gained enormous numbers of voters, including for example, suburban women who were previously Republicans. But it is true when you look at the results in a lot of these states that Sanders won in 2016 in the primary, such as Oklahoma, which you just mentioned, or even Michigan, his numbers look significantly worse, specifically with that group. And that's something that he was not counting on. When you add that to the fact that he and his campaign were planning to really get sort of blockbuster youth voter turnout to really juice his numbers, and that did not happen, it all adds up to a pretty discouraging set of results for him, but also for the party overall when they wonder about what it's going to look like to win some of these states in November. Obviously, Oklahoma is not really on the table for them, but Michigan, Minnesota, Maine, these states that he won in 2016 and is struggling with now, they certainly are.
Here's a clip of Biden's most consequential endorser, South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn, the number three Democrat in the House, who helped turn South Carolina around for Biden, therefore helping to start the surge that he's on. This is Clyburn last night on NPR.
I think when the night is over, Joe Biden will be the prohibitive favorite to win the Democratic nomination. And quite frankly, if the night ends the way it has begun, then I think it is time for us to shut this primary down. It's time for us to cancel the rest of these debates.
Jim Clyburn on NPR. And Gabe, I was shocked when I heard Clyburn say that last night. Sanders voters might feel so disenfranchised by that. And obviously Biden would need the people who are voting for Bernie Sanders in the primaries against Trump. What's Jim Clyburn doing, suggesting that the Democratic Party shut down future debates?
Well, that's a question that I think a lot of Democrats are trying to figure out right now. Listen, there's a reason that Clyburn is one of the only people saying this for now. You have other people sort of saying, well, this primary is over. Let's let Sanders get out while, you know, the way that he wants to. Clyburn is not someone who's been very close to Sanders politically and has not made any secret of that, and nor has Sanders about his feelings about Clyburn's politics. I would say that his position here is definitely not the majority position of the Democratic Party, particularly with the concerns that we were just talking about, that there are some Sanders supporters who will feel hard done by this process and who feel that they really want to make sure that their views are heard. The Democratic Party, especially after 2016, is going to be very careful to make sure that no one in the Sanders camp feels that they are being treated unfairly, including by shutting down the process. There is still a debate on Sunday, and all accounts are that Sanders and Biden are both going to go to it. But the overall point that I think Clyburn was making, not to necessarily smooth out some of those points, but I do think that he was saying essentially this primary is over, Biden has won, let's as a party move on. There's a difference, of course, between saying that and sending that general message and specifically suggesting that the DNC stop the primary process. That is, I can say with a lot of confidence, not going to happen.
Yeah. And by contrast to Clyburn there, here's one more Biden clip from last night, still more humble than triumphant, and reaching out to Sanders and his supporters.
Take nothing for granted. Want to earn every single vote in every single state. But if you're willing, if you want to join us, go to joebiden.com. Sign up. Sign up. Volunteer and contribute if you can. We need you. We want you. And there's a place in our campaign for each of you. And I want to thank Bernie Sanders and his supporters for their tireless energy and their passion. We share a common goal, and together, we'll defeat Donald Trump. We'll defeat him together. We're going to bring this nation together.
Was that something new for Joe Biden?
The tone certainly was. I mean, he's been obviously trying to beat Bernie Sanders, not to bring Bernie Sanders into his fold for the last year plus. But it's very, very obvious that Joe Biden himself and a lot of the people surrounding him learned a lot of lessons from 2016, when a lot of people on that part of the party felt that Bernie Sanders' supporters and the candidate himself did not sign on for the Clinton sign on to the Clinton effort quickly enough. And a lot of Sanders people say that's because the Clinton outreach was not sufficient. And that, of course, this is the subject of ongoing debate that I don't really think it's productive to get back into. But essentially, Biden is now realized that it's March. He has a few months here even before the convention, let alone before November, to bring the party together. And he's not going to waste any time trying to do it. But it's very interesting to see him do this and outright say to Sanders supporters explicitly, please come and join us. You know, as you said, trying to do this with some humility rather than with a sense of triumph, because he realizes this is going to be a difficult task, but an absolutely crucial one if the Democratic Party is actually going to unite. And I think it's important to say, by the way, that the way that Bernie Sanders talks about Joe Biden is different from the way that he talked about Hillary Clinton. Again, at rally after rally that I've been to with Bernie Sanders, when he starts his section about Joe Biden, invariably, his crowds boo pretty loudly. And Sanders always, well, almost always, shushes them and says, please don't boo. You know, Joe Biden is a friend of mine. I like Joe Biden. I just think he's wrong on some issues. So Sanders has always said he will support Joe Biden if Biden is the nominee and vice versa. But I think that now we're starting to see what this is going to look like. And it might actually be a pretty difficult few months as the party tries to coalesce here, especially if Sanders does intend to, you know, keep running in some of these races and margins keep looking like this. But Biden is at least nodding in a direction that a lot of Democrats wish were more easily done even back in 2016.
You could imagine Sunday night's debate, rather than focusing on, you know, socialism versus centrism, certainly the first question out of the gate in the first section, I would imagine, would be coronavirus related.
I would assume so. Obviously, I don't know what the moderators are planning, the CNN moderators specifically, but this is a point Sanders has been making over the last week or so. You know, he did a roundtable event in Detroit focused on the coronavirus threat the other day. And the main point that he talked about, in addition to his usual complaints about how the Trump administration is not beholden to science, was essentially that in his Medicare for All scheme, in this system, people would be covered, and that it's a tragedy and a scandal now that people might not be able to get tested, but depending on, you know, their level, their socioeconomic status or their legal status when it comes to immigration. So, you know, this is something that he's been talking about pretty openly, and I would be absolutely stunned if at the debate he doesn't make that point as well.
I wonder if there are questions that could bring out distinctions between Biden and Sanders. Certainly they would both criticize the federal government for not ramping up testing quickly enough, and Trump for his attitude and things like that. And I'm sure Bernie Sanders would bring up how this would be, this is a perfect example of how Medicare for All would benefit the country, considering how many people are going to face financial difficulties when they get sick. And Biden would talk about his temperament, probably, and experience relative to Bernie Sanders, as he would argue it. But I wonder if there are any questions beyond that about, like, do you have a different approach than the other guy?
I think the short answer to that is not really. They may have, in fact, different ideas about how to get this all done. But the overall point of their idea, which is basic government competence and having a leader that Americans can trust, is very similar. And that follows a pattern, by the way, that I think is a little bit underappreciated in terms of the Democratic primary debates overall over the last year or the last 6 months or so, which is that whenever these candidates are asked about Donald Trump and asked to basically contrast from one another when it comes to issues surrounding the president, they don't really do it. They agree for the most part that basically everything the president is doing is bad. And while they may have different philosophical or ideological underpinnings for their objections to the president, their solutions are very often very similar. And in a case like this, the messaging, the overall messaging that you're hearing from Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, yes, there are differences in terms of here's what I would do differently. And with Sanders, again, it's his old standby Medicare for All. And with Biden, it's have a strong leader we can all trust. But that really is the same message from both of them at the end of the day, which is you need to have a government that is competent, that is well-organized, but also that believes in science.
Medicare for All wins a majority support in exit polls of Democratic voters. Tuition-free public college. Last week, the numbers I saw, it was winning over 70% support among Democratic primary voters. The problem for Bernie Sanders was that too large a minority of people who support those ideas were voting for Joe Biden anyway. How do you hear that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's largely because while a lot of people are very, very passionate about these policies, including a lot of people who are Sanders supporters, there are also a lot of Biden supporters who agree with the general points. But essentially, their overriding concern is not making sure that Medicare for All is passed first. It's making sure that Donald Trump is no longer the president, and they find that Biden is the better way to do that, or at least the safer bet in many cases. But there is an obvious argument to be made that Bernie Sanders should, if you're one of his supporters, stay in this race in order to extract policy concessions from Biden on these issues, as he did towards the very end in 2016. These issues have become significantly more popular over the last 5 years, largely thanks to the work of Bernie Sanders. There's basically no denying that. And he knows that. He knows the changes that he's been able to make, or at least surface in the Democratic Party over the last 5 years. So I think he's going to be thinking very carefully about what his role is over the next 6 months or so, not just in staying in this race in order to compete to win, but in order to shape the party's agenda. You know, in 2016, he was able to ensure that the party's platform was the most progressive it had ever been. I would be absolutely stunned if he didn't try to do something similar this time.
Gabe DeBenedetti, national politics correspondent for New York Magazine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.